Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Deep Dish Radio. I'm Tim Powers. Contemporary American comedy has many fathers. The Marx Brothers, Lenny Bruce, Ernie Kovacs, but possibly the most identifiable influence on the collective comedy scene, and the thing that influenced everything that came after it, was Mad Magazine. Launched as a comic book in 1952, Mad's flavor of satire left its fingerprints on Saturday Night Live, The Simpsons, today's alt comedy scene, and pretty much everything that came after it. The man at the center of all this is a humble cartoonist named Harvey Kurtzman. Kurtzman led a complicated life, full of triumph and failure, and it's all chronicled in a new book from Fantagraphics. It's titled Harvey Kurtzman, the man who created Mad and revolutionized American humor, and it's a thoroughly researched labor of love by today's guest, Eisner-nominated author Bill Shelley. Shelley's written over 20 books, many of which deal with comics and comics fandom, and he joins me today to discuss Kurtzman and his new book, which is available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and of course, if you really want the book, be sure to ask for it at your local brick-and-mortar comic book store. If they don't have it, they'll get it for you. Here's Bill Shelley.
It's Deep Dish Podcast. Subscribe today and tell a friend about Deep Dish Podcast with Tim Powers. With Tim Powers.
So, with regard to Harvey, let's talk about how you got involved. What was it about Harvey that prompted you to write the book in the first place?
Well, when I was a kid, I stumbled across several of the Mad paperback books that reprinted his early stories that he did in the Mad comic book of the early 50s.
Right.
And they were so outrageous that I was just completely taken with his talent and everything.
It really is amazing. What, art speaks to different people different ways. What was it about what Harvey did that really highlighted it for you?
Well, he's first of all, he really knew about the people and the characters and the politicians that he was making fun of, so he could really zero in on very specific aspects of them. Like with Mickey Mouse, he said, "Well, let's face it, it's just really a large mouse wearing gloves. You know, it's a he's got three fingers on each hand. I mean, Donald Duck doesn't wear pants, and Pluto can't talk for some reason, but all the other animals can." And I just thought that stuff was really cool when I was a kid because he really knew what he was making fun of. Not that anything he was doing was all that momentous, although he did make fun of Joseph McCarthy during the McCarthy era in the 50s, and he did some fairly pointed political stuff, but mostly the Kurtzman Mad wasn't too political. It was mostly making fun of popular culture. It was making fun of things like movies, magazine covers,
other ads, comics,
other comics. Eventually they were doing ads, you know, like satires of beer ads and cigarette ads and things like that,
right? And satire in the 50s was kind of a lost art. You do a great job in the book kind of talking about the culture at the time, and you know, there's a conformity, the leading comic of the time was Martin and Lewis, and while funny, absolutely not real political, not real subversive, to some extent, not even as smart, I think, as what you saw coming out of Mad. and Harvey kind of rebooted everything. Would you agree with that?
Well, absolutely. You know, the Martin and Lewis thing, they were not satirical per se. The thing is, during World War II, society in general became very conformist because we were supporting the president against the in a good war. And then after the war, everybody became paranoid about communists. And it got to be a very strange age where underneath there was all these things seething, but on the surface it was Leave It to Beaver families. It was everybody was supposed to be this perfect, happy American nuclear family, and the reality was very different. And Mad came along and just said, hey, wait a minute, this is just ridiculous, this kind of image. And as a matter of fact, the hypocrisy of society is just a perfect subject to make fun of.
Yeah, that's one of the things I picked up in the first third of the book when you talk about Harvey's childhood, because he got to see communism from both sides of the fence. You know, you point out that he went to a socialist summer camp and was raised kind of by some leftists, and he got to see all of that, and then came of age during this, you know, he became a man during the Cold War and the Kefauver hearings. Can you talk a little bit about how that influenced him?
Well, sure. First of all, yes, indeed, Kurtzon's parents were communists. They were both Russian immigrants, and this was during the Depression when a lot of people were looking at the, you know, 30% unemployment rate and wondering what was wrong with our system.
Right.
And it wasn't that outrageous. A lot of people were really thinking about solutions like socialism and communism. But Harvey never really liked that. What he got out of that was the idea that he was pro-worker rather than pro-management. And also he was very much against racism. Well, those are the two things that he got that you could say came from the leftist side. But otherwise, he really didn't like it. And when he went to that socialist summer camp, he used to say, even the magazines they gave us smelled bad.
Yeah.
You know, he just was not a fan at all of these people that sympathized with Russia and all that. He was much more an American, four-square American.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, with to be anti-racism in the 50s when, you know, things are starting to change. The civil rights movement is starting to pick up some steam. Major League Baseball was integrated in 1947, which was a momentous occasion.
Yeah.
I mean, my hometown, St. Louis, Missouri, I don't think the Cardinals integrated until the early 50s. So
right. It
was a pretty remarkable thing. But the other, I suppose one of the most interesting ways that you paint Harvey himself is that externally, if you met him on the street, if you encountered him at a cocktail party, you know, he aspired to kind of a Ward Cleaver kind of lifestyle externally, but internally he was, if you'll pardon the pun, this madman on paper.
Well, he's a man of many contradictions, and that is one of them, definitely. You know, he was like an iconoclast, where he, you know, want to take down the authorities and the idols and everything. And at the same time, he did seek the establishment symbols of success, like the nice house and the financial security and all that. So, you know, he was there were these contradictions in him for sure. And I think that's what makes him kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of cool how he carried on the Marx Brothers tradition. You know, you say very early on that he was a Marx Brothers fan, which first of all made him okay with me right off the bat.
And well, then, I mean, I think isn't it agreed that Groucho Marx is just about the most brilliant comedian who ever lived?
Yes, without a doubt, he was. I'm speaking to you right now from about six blocks from Hollywood and Vine. And I know where Groucho's star is.
Yeah.
I know where the theater is that they shot You Bet Your Life. So, yeah, I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and you know, Groucho could just stand there and be funny. He doesn't have to do anything.
And often did.
Yeah.
And often did. Well, with regard to Harvey, you know, his early years in comics really kind of became I don't want to say it became a who's who of who was in the industry, but it was unavoidable, starting with his early days at the Arts and Music High School.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's where his creative life really got started. It was when he went to high school and he started meeting all these talented artists. And, you know, it was a school specifically for people that were talented. And so it was a high concentration of that. And he ran into some people that liked to do some of the same things he did, the funny cartoons and the satirical cartoons. And, I mean, he ran into people like Willie Elder and L. Feldstein and, you know, his...
Al Jaffe.
Al Jaffe absolutely went there. And, you know, his best friend, Harry Chester, went there, who worked with him all through his career. And Ed Fisher and a lot of people who he worked with later. And, in fact, even at that point in his life, he had aspirations to become a media mogul. And he wanted to publish his own magazine. He was fantasizing even then about bringing these people together in a magazine that he would edit.
But, you know, he put in his 1,000 hours, which is something that comedians and musicians today say. You know, the Beatles got to be where they were because they workshopped in Hamburg, you know, 15 hours a day.
You know? Yeah. I mean, they played, you know, so many shows. It's just crazy.
Right. And so as he's in high school and as he goes through the later end of the golden age of comics, after he gets out of the army, he encounters people like Gil Kane, like Stan Lee, like Bill Gaines and Max Gaines. And, his reaction to each of those people is really interesting. Can you talk about how, about Harvey's relationship with Bill and Max both?
With Bill Gaines?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't have a relationship with Max Gaines.
Right.
Mac, you know, but certainly, well, let's start with Stan Lee. I mean, after he got out of the army, you know, he had to find work, and he just fell back into the comic book type of thing he was doing before the war as a boy almost. And the first place he went was to the Timely Comics office where Stan Lee was working. And, of course, Timely is now Marvel.
Right.
And he said that he just got a really good vibe from Stan. And Stan basically was so busy, he basically was able to give Harvey carte blanche to do these fillers called Hey Look. And Kurtzman, the key thing in Kurtzman's career is that when he had creative freedom, he did his best work.
Yep.
He absolutely made a huge difference in the quality of what he did and so on. And Hey Look was just this brilliant one-page, ridiculous, silly feature. And the people in the Timely offices started noticing it. Al Jaffe came over and started looking at it, going, hey, guys, you know, Mike Sikowski, different people in that office would start paying attention to this little nebbish Harvey Kurtzman just because his work was so different and so funny. And yet when he went to meet Bill Gaines, who had inherited the EC Comics shop from his father, who was killed suddenly.
Right.
There was really no place for him at EC. He walked in the door thinking they were educational comics and maybe he'd do some sort of educational comic book work. And they just said, no, we're entertainment comics now. And we think your Hey Look strips are funny, but we don't have any place for you here. And so, but Gaines was a very exceptional guy because he loved talent and he had an eye for recognizing talent. And you can see the incredible people he pulled together at EC there, Wally Wood, Al Williamson, and so on. And he recognized the quality of what Harvey could do. So he said, now, wait a minute, maybe we could do some kind of a tryout here. They gave him that strip about the ignorant cowboy who happened to contract syphilis. It was an educational strip.
Yep.
Not being published by EC, but by Gaines's brother, David Gaines, or uncle, excuse me.
Right.
And but Harvey did this strip, and it showed that he could do something more realistic. And that's when Gaines said, okay, we'll give you a horror script and we'll see what you can do. And suddenly, because Gaines was open-minded enough to give him a chance, and you know, how many places give you a chance? They want to see what you can deliver the work right away. They gave him that chance, and he just knocked their socks off with his tryout strip, which was called House of Horror. And his stories appeared in the very first horror comic from EC, True Horror Comic, and the very first science fiction comic, Vault of Horror and Weird Science. And so he was there at the at the very beginning of the EC New Trend, which, of course, is one of the most influential and important comic book trends in history.
No question about it. No question about it. And it's interesting, the parallel, that as you were telling the story, I'm thinking about Jack Davis, who, you know, now, 60 years later, you don't think of necessarily as a straight story illustrator. You think of those great movie posters and all the great humorous work that he's done. Yeah, but Jack Davis's horror and science fiction were great stories as well. So, you know, good on Gaines for noticing the talent.
Absolutely. And the thing about Davis is his work was so ingratiating. It was so appealing to the eye because he had such a good ink technique, and that he could really do both, just like Kurtzman could do both humor and serious.
Yeah, it's really really interesting. Another artist that that Harvey came in contact with was Gil Kane, and I thought the story between those two was kind of interesting. Can you share a little bit about that?
Well, sure. This was before World War II. When Harvey got out of high school, he was only 16, so he had some time before he was going to be drafted, because the war was going on. And so he had to make money, and he found a job working in a little comic book studio run by a guy who hired a little fledgling artist who he could pay very little to do these comic book stories that he would package and then sell to publishers. You know, an entire comic book, he'd deliver 64 pages, and then they would publish it. And Harvey found a job in this shop, and one day a guy named Gil Kane came in, and Gil Kane was about the same age as Harvey, and he was actually had a similar background, Jewish background and everything, but he wanted to be a comic book artist, but Kane didn't even know how to draw at all at that point. And he would look at what Harvey was doing, and Harvey would be sitting at the drawing board and just eating a sandwich and just creating panel after panel after panel of these superhero stories. And it wasn't very good work at all, but he had the ability to tell a story. He had the ability to know how to place the figures and how to...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do it, and Kane would just sit there and go, you just watch him doing it. And it was unnerving.
Yeah.
Because Kane was nowhere near what Harvey was doing when Harvey was 17. And they didn't work together very long, because I think because Kane really couldn't cut the mustard at that point.
Sure.
They became great friends later, and same with Will Eisner. Harvey and Will Eisner became friends, and they all through their later careers, you know, they did stuff together, and the same with Gil. They both developed strong friendships with Harvey.
Yeah, he seemed like somebody that anybody with a sense of humor would want to be friends with. Let's talk about your personal journey. How did you discover? When did you become aware of the fact that Harvey Kurtzman was a creator?
Well, the first time I heard his name was when I used to sneak Playboys from my older brother in the 60s. I mean, didn't we all do that?
Oh, yeah.
And his name was on Little Annie Fanny.
Right.
And so immediately I knew that this is a guy who did funny comic strips and sexy comic strips. And then as I got a little, and at that same time, I got involved in this comic fandom movement that was happening in the 60s, where people who liked comics were saying, now, wait a minute, these aren't just for kids. And they started finding each other and having clubs and meetings and fanzines. And I was involved in all that. And then in reading some of these amateur fanzines of the 60s, I learned that he had done these war stories for EC, for comics called Two-Fisted Tales and Frontline Combat,
right.
And that these stories were really sophisticated storytelling techniques and were innovative. They were anti-war during the Korean War, of all things.
Sure.
And so that's when I learned, oh, wait a minute, Harvey Kurtzman did Little Annie Fanny, and then he did these serious war things, and then people would say, well, of course, you know he started MAD. I went, really? So I connected it with those MAD paperbacks, and I suddenly put all the pieces together, and I realized this guy is really someone I admire, and I love his work. So I followed that work for many years, and I've written, you know, over 20 books, most of them about comics and comics history. And I was sitting in my publisher's office, Gary Groth of Fantagraphics, about exactly 4 years ago, and we were discussing what I could do next, and I'd done a couple of biographies, and he said, well, what would you think of Kurtzman? And it kind of rocked me back in my chair, and I went, oh my God, I would love to do that, but that'd be a huge project. I mean, what a challenge.
And no kidding.
Said, well, I think, he said, Bill, I you know, if you think you can do it, I believe in you. If you think you can get the access to the material, and so that's how it began. And so I had the opportunity to find out and to tell his story, the story of someone who I had admired since I was a teenager.
And you uncovered a lot of great things. Your story's not too different from my own. I used to sneak, I'm 46, so in the early mid-70s, I used to sneak my uncle's MAD magazines and just devoured them. You know, they used to have stacks of them, and really got influenced by MAD, but, you know, Harvey was long gone by then. And I was a Marvel zombie at the time, too, and loved everything that Stan put out. I was 11 years old. And at the time, Marvel had put out a teen magazine called Pizzazz, right? And about the time that it got national distribution, they started putting Hey Look pages in there. And that was my favorite part of Pizzazz, which essentially was just Tiger Beat, really, with kind of a Marvel flair to it. But they threw in Hey Look, and I went, this is really interesting.
They're different.
Yeah. And I saw the byline and found myself at the library, you know, within the next few weeks looking up everything I could find on this guy. And I found the Gaines biography, and I found you know, the great tomes of the 70s about comics history, because there were only like four or five books at the time written about comic books. And really started to go down that rabbit hole. So it was really kind of cool to read this book finally, you know, 35 years later, and go, okay, now I get a much bigger picture of everything. As you did your research on this, and granted, you've been a fan for years, but as you went down the rabbit hole, did you discover anything new, anything kind of interesting that I don't want to say would spawn a sequel, but maybe another trajectory you would want to go?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. Certainly, one of the things that interested me were the comedians in the 50s that were involved, that were sort of starting the new comedy at that time. You know, people like Lenny Bruce and Mort Saul and Ernie Kovacs and Woody Allen and those people. And, you know, I am very interested in the history of stand-up comedy and those comedians.
Sure.
So I could, and since Kurtzman used those comedians in MAD, he had them write pieces when MAD became a magazine in 1955.
Right.
He had them write pieces for it. And they were great admirers of him. In fact, Lenny Bruce was going to do something for a Kurtzman magazine at one point. It never happened, but, you know, it's a tantalizing little footnote in Harvey's career.
Sure.
But Ernie Kovacs contributed to MAD. And so, you know, maybe there could be some kind of a, I could see somehow writing a book about the new comedians. There have been other books, though, so it would have to be from a different angle for sure.
Yep, I'm actually holding one in my hand, and I thought, with all due respect to your book, I thought it was the missing companion to a fantastic book, if you don't mind, called Seriously Funny by Gerald Nachman, who goes through biographies of guys like Mort Saul and Sid Caesar and Tom Lehrer and Kovacs and you know, that generation of comedy, which to the comics that are coming up now, my generation, and even a little bit younger, they're almost overlooked. And, you know, when I read Seriously Funny, I thought, well, Matt is completely missing from this book. What a great 1-2 punch. However, I'm sure you can put your own spin on that era of comedy and really make something out of it. I would love to see that.
Well, the thing about it is to write any kind of a book like this, to make it worthwhile, what you have to do is have access to material that really hasn't been known before. And in this case, on the Kurtzman book, I got access to Harvey Kurtzman's archives and archival papers that just added so much to the book of things that had never been known before.
Right.
And even things like the FBI investigation of his war comics, because they were, you know, J. Edgar Hoover suspected that they were anti-American, because maybe they were trying to convince people, soldiers, not to obey authority or something, which was completely ridiculous, and they dropped it once they looked into it. But, you know, things like his correspondence, that. This material became available to me, and so therefore you can write a book if you have access to the material. So that's always going to be a consideration when I think of a project is, you know, what am I going to bring to the table that no one has done before? So if I were going to do a book on comedians, it would have to be after I found some way to give it, bring in some new unknown material.
Sure.
For sure. But what I wanted to do was tell a compelling story of a guy who basically, because he was such a creative genius and innovator, he really changed the world. He changed American humor by bringing in this kind of humor in the 50s, which then spread to comedians and other magazines, and now then Saturday Night Live, of course, and so forth.
Right.
His influence is really, his creative DNA is everywhere.
Yeah, that was actually my next question was going to be, where do you see Harvey's influence today? Because without what Harvey did with Mad and the humor mags that came after that, there wouldn't be George Carlin and Richard Pryor, and consequently there wouldn't be Saturday Night Live. Your foreword by Terry Gilliam of Monty Python, what, you know, really put a it not only whet your appetite for the book, but put a really good bow on it too. Cause you know, what greater blessing can you have?
Well, yeah. And also even beyond the comedy thing, Tim, there's the social effect. You know, some people really feel like Mad was the beginning of the counterculture, was the beginning of the idea that we're not just going to accept what the establishment wants us to be. We're going to think for ourselves. And that was really, that inculcated, you know, millions of kids. I mean, this was going out to young kids, and not only in cities, but Mad, as a comic book, went under the radar and went to every little town and hamlet, every little newsstand. Kids, every kid could get his hands on Mad. And it was sort of like, an infection, as Terry Gilliam says. But it really its effects just can't be overstated. And even on, like I said, the counterculture, or some people think, you know, for example, that the anti-war protests in some fashion were a result of Mad, at least in some way. I'm not saying entirely.
Sure.
But as Mad, you know, picked up the mood of the time and really incited the mood of the time in some ways, or clarified the mood, you know, and... you know, teachers hated Mad and parents hated Mad, and that was just great.
Yeah, through the 70s and 80s too. I can assure you of that.
Absolutely. And you know, kids love things that their parents hate, you know. And but just the idea that they can think for themselves, and it's not something their parents would want them to maybe read. I think that alone, the idea that you can think for yourself, I think is really great.
Yeah, I got that even more with because I found Humbug doing some because you whet my appetite while I was reading the book, and I'm like, you know, I've never read Humbug, so yeah. I went and found some. And I got that. I got that think for yourself thing even more than I got from the first, you know, 10-15 issues of Mad the comic.
And Humbug though is very much about 1957 and 1958 when it came out.
Right.
You know, it is about the TV shows of that era and the politicians of that time. So it is a little harder to go back to for someone that isn't steeped in the culture of the late 50s. To understand a lot of the references and things like that. But if you, you know, if you do understand those references, I really think Humbug is just really brilliant from first to last.
No question. Absolutely no question. So I suppose we'll wrap it up with a couple more questions, but what do you think Harvey would think of the comedy scene today, Comedy Central and the comedy movies that are out right now? And, you know, what would he think of his comedic grandchildren?
Well, I know he would just absolutely love Jon Stewart. It's too bad, of course, Jon Stewart's leaving, and Stephen Colbert as well.
Sure.
But the idea that you could use humor to skewer politicians combined with Harvey was a news junkie. So you can just see how he would have loved Jon Stewart.
Sure.
Because, you know, the daily, following the news every day and using satire to criticize, really, because satire is a form of criticism. But as far as Comedy Central, I don't know exactly where he would feel about that. I don't know as much about his preferences for his personal entertainment, like what he would like, what kind of TV shows he liked that much. Not too aware if he was a big fan of stand-up or what. Anything that's iconoclastic, anything that gives the finger to the man, he would like.
So I have a feeling he'd be of two minds with South Park. He would see it for, you know, he would see it for the social satire that he is, and probably roll his eyes at a couple of the fart jokes.
Well, you know, the thing is, he was of a generation. He was that generation. So he absolutely, some of the stuff that came along later, you know, went further than he would have been comfortable with. But that's only a function of the time that he lived. If Harry Kurtzman's spirit had come along later, I know he would have loved those things too, just like we do. It's just that, you know, in his day, you know, you could only... fuck was not something you used in, you probably have to bleep me on that.
I don't, as a matter of fact, which is great. Oh, thank you, Harvey.
is not something that you would use in entertainment, but it was certainly part of his daily vocabulary.
and such was the...
I know that for a fact, yeah.
Such was the dichotomy of the 50s, you know? It's,
and
that generation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, other than that, I mean, the book is a fascinating read, start to end. And if you're a fan of present day comedy, and you're a fan of the comedy of the generation, and a fan of the comics medium, and if you're not, you have no business listening to my show. this is a fan.
Or if you're ever a fan of Mad. You know, definitely this book should interest you because there's an awful lot about Mad and other aspects of his life. But the Mad story is his crowning story for sure.
You find me an American male between 65 and 11 who's not a fan of Mad magazine. You'd be hard-pressed.
There you go.
And that's fantastic. Bill, anything else you want the world to know about this book?
I guess the only other thing I'd like to say, again, is that even though it's, you know, we talk about it being 642 pages, there's, you know, over 250 illustrations and photos. The print is not small. It's a very readable book. It's not a scary book to read.
So don't be
intimidated. If you're thinking about this book, don't think, oh, gee, that's going to be a heavy book. It's not. It was meant to be an entertaining it's in depth, but it's entertaining and readable. I guess that's what I'd like people to know.
Not only that, but the artwork that you got from the archives is typically of Fantagraphics reprinted so beautifully. You know, that it's really worth your dollars, and really appreciate it. Bill, thank you so much for your time. It's a pleasure to meet you, and I hope that we get a chance to shake hands one of these days, and I hope we rub elbows at a convention, and the next book comes out, I hope you'll give us a call.
Okay, thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
It's a gas!
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.